Welcome back to The Digital Dive, a conversation about technology. My name is Jacqueline, and I'm one of your hosts.
And my name is Darsh. I am your other host this week. This week, we're talking about a ton of things, and first and foremost, we'll be talking about Netflix and how they're cracking down on password sharing between families. We'll also be talking about a bunch of cool grad gifts that you can get for anyone you know who's currently graduating, as well as a Google Pixel 7 Pro prototype that was found on eBay, Amazon Astro Robot, and the new Playdate portable gaming console.
It's going to be a really packed episode, so if you like what you hear this episode, make sure to hit the follow button on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. It really helps us like actually get the show out to more people, and it makes sure that you get notified of every single episode. Let's roll the intro and then hop right into it. Okay, Darsh, I think this has been a hot topic, and it's Netflix. And the fact that they are just losing a lot of money right now, they haven't really been able to figure out the business model in the way that they thought they were going to. And they are blaming password sharing as a key culprit, which password sharing, for anyone that isn't aware, is like if Darsh and I had the same Netflix account, and we were using each other's, like we were using the same account, but we're in two different locations. Netflix prohibits this. They only want people in the same exact location, same household, to use the same account.
But see, like, that doesn't make sense to me. Like, why call it a family account then? It's not called a household account.
Agreed. Yeah, because the argument, so basically in Peru, they tried this password sharing experiment and supposedly it left like users really confused. And it's because they weren't notified that the change was coming, I guess. And so some Peruvian users, I hope that's the right, is that right, Darsh? Is it Peruvian?
I believe so.
Okay, I hope so. If not, I apologize, guys. But some people were saying that they have immediate family members that just don't live with them. For example, like let's say parents and a kid at college or something, but like they are in the same family. And so like the argument is like, why can't they use the same account? But Netflix is saying that if you want an additional user, you don't have to pay the same price as a like brand new account. They're giving a deal where they'll basically charge an extra like what's equivalent to $2.89 USD to add up to two users located outside of the account holder's household. And the way they're kind of like cracking down on this is, I guess like through IP and figuring out where someone's actually based. And it's because Netflix is losing subscribers for the first time in over a decade.
Well, that's crazy too, right? So like we're looking at now a new era of, yes, media consumption where you have all these different opportunities and options and alternatives in terms of what you can consume. And the fact that Disney Plus has so many networks underneath them that they have all premiering on there. Now there's also Discovery Plus, and Discovery actually, if you guys didn't know, just bought out HBO. Or like Warner Brothers. So now all HBO shows and everything under Warner Brothers will be going to Discovery in the next year or two as well. So if you're looking for like traditional media that you were already consuming, you're probably going to end up signing up for one of those platforms rather than Netflix, which is literally creating all of their shows and stuff on their own. And they're not really partnered with any major networks. So I kind of understand why they're trying to do this. But at the same time, there's a lot of people like myself, for example, who live away from home for most of the year for school, but I do actually like my legal residence is with my parents back home. So while I'm away at school, I use their Netflix. But does this mean now that moving forward, they're going to make it so that I can't and I have to have my own account when I'm away from home? Like that doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah. And I think like it's almost putting a Band-Aid on a bullet hole. Like how I think that this definitely is an issue for them because they're losing a lot of potential new accounts, but still, there's a bigger issue here of like, how are they going to retain users and compete in this market that's becoming increasingly more competitive while also still spending the exorbitant amounts of money that they're spending?
Well, yeah, that's just about it, right? Like they're spending money like crazy. They're buying all these new pieces of film, all these new TV shows. They're green lighting and setting up all these cool new crime documentaries, at least the ones I've been watching, that have been coming out like rapid fire. They've been producing a lot of content, and at this point, they've been putting so much money into all this content. Like, I get why they're a little upset that people aren't fully spending. But also, Netflix over the past like 10 years has been constantly increasing their price. And it's never been like, I wouldn't call it necessarily affordable at the place that it's at right now. I think most other platforms are actually more affordable than Netflix is right now, if you actually think about it. Like, I can get Prime Video for $5 a month. And that also includes Amazon Prime, just for being a student. Netflix is like,
wow, is that really that inexpensive?
It's literally for art, like for Prime, for students. It's a student deal. You can get it for $5 a month, and it gives you Amazon Music, Amazon Prime Video, and Amazon Prime.
That is like an insane deal.
Yeah, so when you're in a space like that, or even Disney Plus, it's like $8 a month Canadian. Like, you're spending $8 a month, you get five accounts, get five users, and there's nothing about it being whether or not you're in the same household or not. But Netflix now is bringing this in, and they're it's a differentiating point, which makes sense in a fairly homogeneous market. But at the same time, like, it's not a good differentiation point. It's actually something that's going to make it worse for them. So I think you're absolutely right with the Band-Aid over a bullet hole. I actually really like that analogy. But I think that's actually a very, very good point.
Thank you. I think the other thing is that the landscape in which they were once successful isn't the same anymore. Like, it used to be that Netflix was, like, really unique in their offerings. But now people have seen that streaming is, like, the way of the future. And so every company is really investing in it. Even, like, independent creators, like, I'm part of Nebula now. And that's a different niche. But it's, like, high quality video and documentaries and things like that. So everyone has their foot in it, and consumers are only willing to spend a certain amount of money every month before it becomes, like, unreasonable. And so if you have to decide between, like, Netflix, Disney Plus, Hulu, Prime Video, like, what would you pick? You only have one choice. Which one do you think you would pick, Darsh?
Personally, I'd honestly probably end up going Disney Plus, or what we have here, it's called Crave. It's pretty much the equivalent of HBO. I would go with one of those two. But now HBO is going to go to Discovery. Now Discovery is going to be the biggest, I believe they're now going to be the biggest streaming platform in the world, if I'm not mistaken, once they have everything transferred over to HBO. I mean, it might not be a streaming platform. They're going to become one of the biggest shareholders, or they're going to have the most market share, pretty much, in terms of, like, traditional media, now that they're going to, once this all goes.
That's wild.
Discovery too, right? Like, where'd that come from? Where did that come from?
Yeah, agreed. Like, that one, I mean, Peacock also, right? Like, they're taking The Office off of Netflix is actually a big deal. Like, I know a lot of people that, like, stopped watching Netflix after that because, like, they were only using Netflix to watch The Office.
Yeah, same with some people and Friends. Like, I know that here in Canada, it got moved to Crave. And then in the States, I imagine it's HBO Max or HBO Go, whatever they're calling it this week. But yeah, it's a lot of people were on Netflix just for the exclusivity they had with certain TV shows. But now, like, even How Much Your Mother, that's Disney Plus now.
Is it?
Well, at least here it is. I don't know if they still have it, because it's owned by, their distribution is owned by Disney. That's why How Much Your Father is a Disney Plus exclusive.
Okay, so at least in the U.S., How Much Your Father, I think, is Hulu.
Well, Hulu's owned by Disney.
I mean, that actually makes sense, because I think that Disney is one of, like, the biggest players in the space.
Absolutely, they are. They own so much. Like, they literally have been just, like, buying out studio after studio after studio. And it's not even just them, too. Like, Discovery is now doing the same thing. They're, like, building it up so that, and it's also, like, too, like, you used to look at it like, oh, streaming's so inexpensive. It's literally come to a point where it's cheaper than cable. And now with all the different streaming platforms and wanting to get all the content that we have access to, you end up spending the same amount you did on cable, if not more, on all these different streaming platforms.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, for myself personally, if I could only subscribe to one of them, I think it would actually be Hulu. But I don't know, or maybe Prime Video. Yeah, it's actually hard because my gut is, like, Netflix, just because I've known them as a standard for so long. But I actually can't remember the last time I watched something on Netflix that I loved.
That's fair. That's fair. I feel like the thing with me, though, for me, like, I only binge on Netflix. It's weird.
Mm. Well, I think because some platforms only release the shows, like, episode by episode, like, week by week, whereas Netflix often releases, like, the entire catalog at the same time.
Well, yeah, and by doing that, too, it's making it so that it's easier to binge, which I feel like is a very Netflix thing. Like, binging is very, very Netflix. It's not really exclusive to any other platforms. Like, you can binge on any platform, don't get me wrong, but because Netflix's entire business model with these TV shows is that they all come out at one go, you end up just sitting down and binging and giving it all this screen time, like, immediately. Whereas all these other shows, like, yeah, cool, like, the first episode came out and now we're all obsessed with them, you want to see more. Doesn't make any difference, though. Like, you still have to wait a week. It's still, like, normal media.
Yeah, and that actually, in one hand, like, keeps longevity, right? Because then people have to keep their subscription. But I think on the other hand, making it so bingeable makes it, like, an event when a show comes out.
Exactly. Like, this new Stranger Things season came out, and I haven't seen it yet. And I know I need to, but I know that the moment I start it, I'm just going to end up binging it because, like, it's Stranger Things. It's so good. Every single season has just amazed me. So at this point, I'm like, I'm willing to admit that I will binge it all in one go, but I'm not going to start watching it now because I know it's just going to distract me when I need to be focused.
Have you watched the other ones?
The other seasons?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen all of them, and I binged all of them. I binged all of them in a night.
Oh my gosh.
I've binged each and every single season the night it came out, every single time. This is the first time I haven't done that. And I was going to, actually. I was really going to, but I had a midterm the next day. So I was like, okay, shoot, I need to go to bed.
You know, I've been watching a lot of interviews of the cast, and, like, Sadie Sink and Noah, the coolest ever.
They're honestly, like, that, like, the show, it's also incredible, too, because they started out in 2016, and now it's, like, 6 years later. Like, these kids have, like, grown up on camera. It's incredible to
see. God, 2016 was 6 years ago? What is time? Like, that is...
At least crazy. If my math is right. And my math usually isn't right, but I think this time it is.
No, you're totally right. Yeah, anyway, so I guess just to bring us back here, Netflix is going to be cracking down on the password sharing, but I think if Netflix is listening to this, anyone from Netflix, I really think it comes down to just creating a better quality product with like more shows that people actually want to watch, because there's so much competition in the space. I feel like they need to do more now to retain users.
Absolutely. Especially as the pandemic is taking a huge hit on everyone in terms of like, just a lot of people just stay home more. There's so many different new forms of media that wasn't available when the pandemic did start, because now at this point, everyone realized that streaming is where it's at and everyone is willing to sit down and start streaming and trying new shows and new platforms while they are working from home, as many still are. And speaking about working from home and speaking about the pandemic as a whole, one thing that actually I want to give a huge shout out to is all the graduates for this year. Finishing school during a pandemic is one of those big, big accomplishments, because as someone who's currently in school during the pandemic, it is not easy. And a lot of the profs really just do not give a flying poop about any of us. So with that being said, let's talk about a couple of cool graduation gifts that you can get to someone in your life who is graduating. Or if you just feel like treating yourself and you want a cool piece of tech, we're here to give you a cool breakdown of it. Let's get started.
Okay. The Verge put together a very comprehensive list, so I'd highly recommend checking it out. But I think one of my favorite things that they recommended, and this is in the under $20 price range, and so we're going to kind of go through a couple different price ranges, under 20, then 20 to 50, 50 to 100, etc. And so I think in the under $20 price range, a really cool thing to get someone that I think most people don't think of is Spotify Premium.
Wow, that's actually a really good... Can you get, like can you just buy Spotify Premium, like, on a card for someone?
I think you can, yes.
It's pretty cool.
I think that that's actually a great one, because music like is kind of a life-changing thing. And I think especially like if they were a student and they had a plan, but now they're graduating, like maybe they won't anymore.
Yeah.
What about you?
Well, mine would be a bit over the $20 price range. So closer to the $300 price range. It's actually just the iPad. Like even just a general iPad, I wouldn't say you need to get an Air. I wouldn't say you need to get a Pro, but just a general iPad, like especially while being in school, I've realized the versatility that comes from having one. And especially with all the new docks and features and accessories that you can get for the iPad now, it becomes really a much more versatile mobile work system to get just like the basics done. Like if I'm heading out for a day and I want to script something, or if I want to sit down and I want to read, or if I want to just like do any like light basic work, I usually just take my iPad. Like I don't find any reason to bring my laptop, because I don't need that much power to just simply take some notes or to read through a couple of articles or just to amass a certain list. Like it doesn't really matter what it is, but my iPad becomes so versatile because it's bigger than my phone, but I can do everything I can do on my phone on the iPad plus more. It's like this nice intermediary. And I feel like with the computing power that is available in today's day and age, as corny as that kind of sounds, I feel like the iPad kind of does shine a light through. Maybe that's just me.
No, I totally agree. I think that the iPad is a great one, especially with like when people are like starting their first job or something. They won't be using it as a student anymore for note taking, but they could still use it at the job. And also with work from home and stuff, I think the iPad is a really easy, like, take it on the go device with you. The other thing that I think is also a great gift idea, and this is getting in the more expensive price range, so this would be like $150 to $400. I think that you could get someone the AirPods Pro. And I think that would actually be an awesome gift, because if they're going to be commuting more for work, then I would say that the AirPods Pro is a great recommendation, because it has the noise cancellation and also it sounds really good.
Absolutely. I mean, the AirPods Pro are definitely a great buy. I mean, Jack and I have definitely had our issues with the device itself, but in terms of just general everyday use, they do really do well. And I don't know too many people who have ever regretted their decision to buy them. So I will say they are definitely a very, very good recommendation. Good one, Jacqueline. Another recommendation for myself, it's more like I've grown up now and I kind of realize the importance of pictures type gift. And maybe this is just me, especially as someone who's now like starting to look back on my last 4 years of college and then like looking at myself, like I finished school at end of the summer. So
that is crazy.
By end of the summer, my, I guess, 19, 18 year journey of being in school will be complete and I have no interest in going back. But regard that aside, anyway, I thought that actually this was a cool gift idea that The Verge did put up. It was the Fujifilm Instax Mini 11. It's pretty much those Polaroid cameras, like those under $100 Polaroid cameras you can pick up from Fujifilm. Either that or even just a Polaroid printer. I feel like having all your photos on your phone are one thing, but then actually having like a wall of photos that you can kind of look to and refer back to, or it's something important. I feel like actually having that tangible picture in your hand being like, wow, I remember this experience, remember this memory. It's not like you're just scrolling through all these photos on your phone, it's like it actually has substance. So for some reason, to me at least, it makes me more nostalgic and makes me actually appreciate the memory a lot more.
Interesting. Do you also journal? Because my next recommendation for someone would be a bullet journal.
I don't journal as much as I used to. I did a bit more last semester. I do have a notebook that I do keep constantly at the ready just for miscellaneous, like writing anything down, or if I do want to jot out a quick journal, like get some thoughts out on paper. I always do find that better, but I usually just use it as an agenda. But yes, I absolutely agree. Having a journal and having like an actual just like physical book that you can open and write in is so important, because like we sit down on our computers so much and we sit on our phones so much. Like I feel like a lot of people have forgotten how to actually write with their hand.
I agree. And because I'm not writing that frequently, then when I do write, like it actually feels really therapeutic.
Literally, it does. It does. It makes a huge difference.
You know, another recommendation that I would say is a Notion subscription, which also seems like a weird one, but like Notion literally runs my life. Like the combination of Notion plus Google Calendar is it for me. I like everything that I do is on those two platforms. And so I think that as people are graduating from college, they're getting into like a routine and stuff, having a Notion is huge. And so that's just another like weird one that's not super exciting, but I think could actually make the difference. And then the last one that I'll recommend is a coffee maker. I think getting someone like a really nice espresso or an espresso machine is like one of the best gifts. Maybe they're getting their first apartment for the first time. And I think that's just like an awesome present that they will use on a daily basis and think of you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I actually really like that one. My last one was going to be something just pretty simple in terms of like what you can use it for. But I feel like it was already kind of a given just expecting me. It's the Google Nest Hub or the Google Nest Hub Max.
Yeah, no surprise. Any like Digital Dive listener knows that you were going to do that.
Well, at this point, it's just kind of like if you are starting your life and you want to have like a cool alarm clock that does a lot for you, the Nest Hub and the Nest Hub Max are definitely the way to go. I definitely need to upgrade mine to the Max, and I will be doing that ASAP. But the Nest Hub has become one of those things that I literally use on a daily basis, and I do not know what I would do without it.
That is a great recommendation. You know, I use the HomePod a lot, and I've actually been having a pretty significant number of issues with it. And it's not connecting to my phone. Like Bluetooth in general and every single one of my Apple devices right now is genuinely horrible. I'm actually thinking about like making a video on it because I have no idea what's happening. But on a more positive note, there was some news about a Google Pixel 7, and maybe that will have Bluetooth connectivity. I'm just going to roll with it, even though this is an absolutely terrible transition.
I wasn't even going to say... I would have said maybe it won't have Bluetooth because the last one with the Tensor chip was having Bluetooth and connectivity issues.
Oh, that would have been so much better.
I thought that's where you were going to go with it. But I mean, to each their own, it definitely might not have Bluetooth. Like, we don't know. We do not know yet.
Yeah, that was just a horrible, as I was doing it. First of all, I was going to go to break, but then I looked at our topic sheet and I was like, oh no, we still have the Pixel 7. That one's on me. Yeah, all right, let's talk about it. Pixel 7 basically was... a prototype was listed on eBay, so Google tried to get ahead of the leaks by like showing a first look at it at Google I.O., but having the actual phone on eBay is crazy.
Yeah, because especially you can actually just go and buy one. Like, you can literally just go buy a prototype now.
That is wild.
It is. It's crazy to see, but at the same time, it does show what we already knew. Like, it shows the actual new design form factor that we were expecting, and at least this is the normal Pixel 7 prototype, at least the picture that we've been shown here, but it's actually... looking pretty good. Like, I actually am excited for it. It does not actually have the Google logo on the back. It's like some different Google logo almost, but I imagine that's
because it's like a prototype.
Yeah, it's the prototype logo on there, I guess. So like if you did sell it, it wouldn't be considered an actual Google. It would be a fake, but it looks pretty good. I mean, from everything that it's offering so far, like it looks like a pretty solid phone. I like the bezels. They're very slimmed out, except for the bottom, which is somewhat weird. It has a little bit of a chin that I was not expecting. But overall, it does look like a fairly solid phone. I do like the gold and like gray combination. I feel like that's a really, really cool one that I haven't seen before that I'm very excited to see in person whenever it does come out.
Yeah, I hope that they actually end up doing that. And if you actually look at the official image that Google posted, my favorite version on that is the black and silver and like the... green and gold type. But I love the design aesthetic of Pixels. Like, we talked about this a few episodes ago in our Google I.O. breakdown episode, but I actually just love the way they're going with the Pixel line. I actually think it's really cool.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of going back toward like the Nexus lineup. And we were talking about this the other day too, because it's like this, like, fundamentally in terms of design reminds me a lot of the Nexus 6P.
Me too.
So the Nexus 6P and the Pixel 6 kind of came together and they made the Pixel 7. They were like, yeah, this is it.
I totally agree. I feel like they're going back to their design roots. And I feel like for a company, it's really important to have like a brand aesthetic that people know and love. And I think that for Google, the like visor on the back, the clean design, it definitely fits their overall like company aesthetic. And I think that you see the phone, you're like, oh, that's a Pixel, versus like most Android phones kind of bleed into each other in design. So I'm stoked for it. I just think it's funny that it's already on eBay in that way. Obviously we can't confirm if it's true, like if it's the real phone or not, but just a really untraditional way to launch a phone. And I think on that note, we're gonna be traditional and take a quick break here, get some cold brew, get espresso, and then we come back. We're going to continue the traditional episode. And actually, right before we take a break, Darsh and I have been kind of experimenting with different formats for the podcast. We've been doing like multiple topics in every episode and also like one topic episodes. And it would be really helpful for us if you let us know on Twitter which style you prefer. I think like the future of the podcast is are like us doing both, but it would just be helpful to know which one you like better.
Absolutely, guys. Go check that out. Go let us know what you guys think. I'm on Twitter at Digital Dive Pod while we take a quick break. And when we're back, we'll be talking all about Amazon Astro, which is Amazon's robot, actually, and the Playdate, which is a new handheld portable gaming console, which caught my eye earlier this morning. So I definitely want to talk about it. We'll be right back.
Hey guys, welcome back from the break. Right before we hop back in here, I just want to say Darsh and I have like gone through like a just a crazy week and a half of just a lot of work. And so we're both kind of feeling it, both feeling like super like sleep deprived and tired. So if we're a little low energy today, I just want to apologize on behalf of us. Hopefully next week we'll be back to our normal energetic selves and have a little bit more sleep under our belt.
Absolutely. But with that all being said, though, let's chat a little bit about robots and in specific, the Amazon Astro robot, which is, I guess, like, I don't even know how to describe. It's like a screen on top of a Roomba.
And what do you think it's going to be used for?
Well, like,
the big question here.
Like, from what it does seem like, it seems like it's kind of like mapping, and it's like a free-range robot that just kind of goes around your apartment or around your home. I do not know if it is a robot vacuum. I don't think that it is. But from what I understand, though, it's effectively an Echo smart display on wheels with, like, robot noises and also, like, expressions. So, like, it does have a screen.
It looks cute.
Yeah, like, the screen on it gives it two eyes that are just, like, these two empty circles, like, the outlines of a circle. And I guess that with that, it can use and create different expressions and kind of, like, be able to actually communicate with you. But I feel like the biggest thing that kind of just, like, I feel like it just lacks lackluster with it is that it doesn't do much. Like, it just kind of tries to be either a robotic family pet companion or a mobile Alexa. And then I guess also home security. But, like, it doesn't really do much. Like, it would be cool if it was connected to your home security system so that, like, while you weren't home, it was, like, patrolling the place.
Oh, that would be sick.
And, like,
that'd be so
if it
cool.
did see something that was irregular, like the way that the Ring app, for example, will notify you that there's motion, it'll notify you, and then the camera will come out and give you, like, a 360 view of the space, and you can, like, look around. That would be cool. But I don't think that's not one of the capabilities that it does have.
I actually think that would be cool too. I wonder why the two open circles like make it look friendly to me, because it's literally nothing, but like something about it. Do you feel that way too? Like it looks like just like a little mini robot or something. I don't know.
Yeah, like it does look a little bit like a mini robot. Like it does offer and have like a decent, it seems like it does have a decent amount of like, I guess, utility. Like there is a little like.
I was just gonna say, it's funny because The Verge, like in It's Good Stuff, Bad Stuff, it literally has kind of cute as one of the pros of the robot.
It is. Well, no, it's fair enough. Like it's pretty cool and it can like navigate around your place pretty easily, but you need a subscription to use some of the features. It's pretty much just an Alexa. So there's no like actual Astro like robot differentiation. Like it's just pretty much like an Alexa on wheels, right? And it can only map one floor. Plus it's $1,000 or $1,450 once it's publicly available. So it's currently not even like fully available yet. So like something I don't get, it doesn't fully make sense to me who this is for. I do like the idea of like, there's a little compartment in the back so you can like maybe put like a drink in. So you're in the kitchen like and you want to send like your friend's drink. So you just put it in the back, be like, go to the family room and just like send it over. Like that's cool, I guess, if you can label rooms. But I don't know. It just seems like a disappointing first attempt at a robot for the house.
I agree with you because it's really expensive. It's $1,000, can only map one floor. There's a subscription required to use some of the features. Like there's a lot wrong. It almost just feels like the novelty of it being a robot is supposed to be enough for it to be an exciting product. And I don't think that's going to be enough for most people, honestly.
Honestly, yeah, that's fair. Well, okay, so it does have the Ring Protect subscription. Like, you can get that. So it uses the Ring app, and it can, like, follow around, like, intruders around your house or a potential intruder, which I guess is cool. Just follow them, I guess.
It's like someone's robbing your house and now they have like a robot following them, but like nothing else happens.
Yeah, so it's paired with the Ring alarm. It can also investigate any event triggered by the alarm system. So that is a feature that does have, but you require an Alexa Guard and Guard Plus service to listen out for sounds in the home. And then you also need the Ring Protect Pro subscription plan. So at that point, you're effectively buying a new security system when like you could probably just upgrade cameras into your house for that price.
That's valid. You know, like when I was a little kid, I used to think it was like so cool to have like a futuristic robot around the house, like doing stuff. But like, I feel like the actual like in real life versions that we've had of it aren't cool enough yet. And I think like, I would love to still review this actually, because I think it would be a cool video. But let's maybe talk about like a wish list of like things that like we actually think if this product had it, it would be useful. Okay, so I think all the stuff we're about to say is highly unrealistic for the present moment. But one of the things I would like is if it had like arms and it was able to actually do things like grab a cold brew from the fridge or something.
Yeah. I think that would be good. I think that if it was able to map out and be able to label specific areas, like within the app, for example, right? Like say it has LiDAR built in and it's able to actually use whatever system it does to map out the floor that it's on. If you're able to actually go into the app and label each of the rooms for what they are, and then you can label like the pieces of furniture and stuff like that, so that you'd be able to actually tell Alexa to go to certain spots and go do A, B, C, D, or X. Like if I was in the, like I was saying earlier, if I was in the kitchen and handed a beer, be like, oh, go bring this to my buddy on the couch. Goes, yeah. Identifies persons on the couch and goes, gives it to that person on said couch. Like, that would be cool. Like, having it as, like, a server almost. Like, that would be a pretty useful idea or, like, feeling. I also feel like I'd want it to be in better premium materials. If you're spending $1,000 for this and it's, like, looks like it's in mostly pretty cheap plastic, I would want, like, higher-end materials to be used at the very least. If not for anything other than, like, if you have this in a house with, like, an animal, like a cat or a dog who sees it as a threat, like, they're going to beat up this robot.
Mm, that's valid. That's actually really, I didn't even think about that, but that actually poses an obstacle as well. I think the other thing that would be cool is, like, if it was just bigger. Like, I think it's so small right now. Like, so there is a spot to, like, put a drink. You have to, like, bend down. I don't know. I just think, like, in practice, this is not worth it. If this was, like, $200-$300, I think it would be a cool thing, but I still don't think it provides enough utility for what it is right now.
Yeah, I feel like if you could adjust, like, the height of it, that would be cool. Or, like, if, for example, the screen could just go up on like a tripod almost, like it would just elevate and come to eye level. So you'd be able to actually like touch the screen and like use it like that and have it follow you around.
Yeah.
That would be cool. Or even if the cup holders were able to do the same thing, like elevate and come to a certain level, like a sit stand desk almost just for the drinks, like stuff like that would be really cool. It'd actually give it some utility, but there isn't much here because it's just effectively a smart screen on wheels.
Yeah, and also, like, if I had to pick between getting this or just getting, like, an actual, like, smart screen in the kitchen or something, I would pick the kitchen one.
Well, no, exactly. Like, there's even actually, Amazon came out with, when the Astra was announced, actually, they came out with an Echo Smart Display that was going to be, like, 15 inches, I believe.
Yes.
And so with a 15-inch smart display that, like, it looks like a wallpaper almost. So it's literally, like, you just put it on your wall, and it's, like, this giant screen that's touch-able. And it's an Alexa and it has all these widgets to show you about your day and like the weather and like you can put post-it notes and all these different things all virtually. Like imagine hanging that right at the front, at like the front of your kitchen. Like you walk in, you can just like put a post-it note up for the kids, for example, or you can send a message, or you make a call or like do a video call, like all this stuff on this huge screen. I feel like it becomes so useful. And even with this thing too, like Amazon Astro is supposed to have games, but like from everything I've read up about these games that they're offering, they're not very fun. And also because it's a moving robot, it's not necessarily very accessible or portable by any means. But something that is portable and you can game on is the Playdate.
Holy crap, that transition was immaculate.
Oh, thank you.
I
do appreciate that. I mean, Jack, have you looked at this thing? Like, holy poop. It's got
only from you, but it looks really cool. Like, it's got my nostalgia going.
Oh, absolutely. Like, so it has like a crank handle on the right-hand side, which I imagine you use to, like, give it battery, but then it also has a USB-C port in the bottom, so maybe not. I don't know necessarily what the point of the crank is unless it's for one of the games, but it's pretty cool. Like, it's just, like, this tiny little device with a small little screen. It's, like, e-paper display almost with very, very limited graphics, and you can play just a bunch of, like, interesting games. Like, you can play Snake, Sasquatchers, Inventory Hero, Saturday Edition, Questy Chess, Omaze, and I could keep going on with all these games that they have. It's like there's about almost a dozen games that you can play currently, and there is, I believe, plans for them to come out with new games over time, but I don't know. It's different. Like, Jacqueline, what are your thoughts on it? Like, at least design-wise, like, what are your thoughts on it?
I love the design. I love the yellow. Also, the product shot for it is literally beautiful on The Verge. It's just, like, such an aesthetic photo. I think that the lo-fi display definitely plays into, like, the nostalgia and the aesthetic. And, like, it has a really good initial library of games. But I think that we don't know enough about the company to know if they're going to support games in the future, like, and how many games are going to be supported. And then also, because it doesn't have a backlight, I think that it limits where you can actually use this. Like, you need to be in an environment where you have a lot of light. You can't really use it at night. But I think that if it's, like, for $179, it's definitely, like, a easy, portable, like, maybe you buy this for an 8, 10-year-old, or maybe even you're older and you just want, like, the nostalgia of playing a game. I think it's a pretty cool device. I would have loved this when I was a kid.
Honestly, yo, I'd kind of like this right now. Like, this is, like, something I'm looking at. I'm like,
yeah, me too.
I'm like, yo, this actually could be too. It for the summer. Like, I feel like going to the beach and just playing this, like, that would be sick. But it's cool. So apparently this is made by a company called Panic. And so it's apparently supposed to be fairly easy for developers to make their own games through its pulp tool and SDK. And so getting these games onto your device are also pretty straightforward. So I imagine that over time, if this does actually pick up and become a popular device, there will be probably tons of games that you could download. And I actually wouldn't be surprised if you were able to put in like some old Pokemon games on here, because it does have all the controls that you do need. And actually, what I just found out was that the crank is an input method for the game. So like some of the games actually require you to use the crank to like actually do things.
So what do you think, like when you think of like playing a game, what type of utility would you get out of the crank?
Like say for example, there's like a mini game or something where you have to crank, I don't know, a flag up a flagpole. Like did you ever play Mario Party as a kid?
Yes.
So like there were like certain things where you had to like use the joystick and just go like back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Like those kind of things could be translated here to the crank, which would also be very different because I don't think I've ever seen that before.
Yeah. And I think also like sometimes innovating on like something like that actually makes the game more fun. I think sometimes it's like annoying because you just want to play like how you know how to play, but it does have normal keys as well. I just really like it. It's just like, I love the aesthetic. I think like for something like a gaming device, the most important things are the aesthetic and then what games it has. And it seems like both things are pretty well done like well here.
Yeah, well, another thing that's going to be very interesting as well is that the fact that this is actually going for one, $179, but also the fact that they've already sold out all of their production capacity for 2022. So right now, if you want to pre-order it, they're shipping in 2023. So I feel like a device like this, at least from what it sounds like right now, it seems like it's going to actually be relatively lucrative and also be able to actually gain some traction, which I was definitely not expecting.
That's crazy. That's wild. I wonder what they did initially to get the amount of orders that they got.
Well, I don't know. I haven't seen this around literally anywhere. Like The Verge doing a review on it in the first place was probably the only place I would have seen it.
Yeah, me too. I wonder, maybe like I would assume they have a lot of capacity, but maybe it's just that they have really low capacity, so they can't make a lot. But I would say it's probably more likely that they just sold a ton.
Well, I feel like it'd be a mix of both, because this is also like a startup type vibe, right? Like it seemed like this is a very new idea from them, like from their company. Like this is like they just came out with the product, and if they were already, they said their production capacity is shot for the rest of the year, like they're already out. So I feel like they won't be able to produce as many as we'd expect. So maybe they sold a ton, but they definitely sold like a decent bit if their production capacity is at max and then if they're taking pre-orders for the next year. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see. I don't know if it's going to take off as well as it will. I mean, if I could get one this summer at Panic, if you're listening, like I think Jack and I would both like to play with these a little bit, be a little fun. Want to send...
I would be down.
I will talk about it for an entire episode at this point because I'm just curious. Like, no, I'm just straight up curious. Like, what could this game, like, what could these games offer you that are just so different than getting, like, a DS right now? Or, like, not even a DS. I guess you can't get a DS if you wanted to get a 2DS. Or, no, what is it? Nintendo Switch Lite? Is that what they're calling it?
I don't know, honestly. I feel like I'm not enough in the gaming industry to really know about that.
Honestly, neither am I. Like, I just want something that's small, portable, that I could take with me in the car if I'm, like, going on a trip with my parents, or if I'm just, like, chilling outside at a park, like, just, like, play a couple of games, just, like, chill, hang out. I feel like that would be my kind of vibe. I think I'd appreciate it. But also, I was a big DS kid growing up. Like, I played my DS all the time, given I was a huge Pokemon fan, so I kind of had to, but it was perfect. Chef's kiss.
I played the DS a lot, too, actually, even though I was not a huge gamer. When I was younger, like, I really was very into games, and I also played, like, a racing game a lot with my friends, but I haven't played games in so long, and honestly, like, I played Toontown a lot when I was a kid, Club Penguin, but now I feel like I just don't have enough time to dedicate to, like, learning and getting good at a game, and so I don't think I've ever talked about a game in the section of the show, Stuff We Liked This Week, which is a section of the show where we talk about things that we like. And so I'm actually going to continue the theme of not talking about games, because my first one for this week is the new Inside Outtakes by Bo Burnham. Last year, I watched the movie Inside. It was genuinely incredible. Like, so Bo Burnham, for anyone that doesn't know, is a comedian, musician, filmmaker, etc. And he did every single part of this film by himself. He wrote all of the music. He shot the whole thing in one room. It is genuinely like a masterpiece. Like, I'm kind of in awe of him. And this week he just launched all the outtakes on YouTube. I've only watched 20 minutes so far, but it is a masterpiece in and of itself.
All right. I like it. I like it. My first one for this week is going to be a song. It's called Rumors by Nefex, or Nefex. I don't know how to pronounce it. Anyway, it's very angry and upbeat and like, I guess just like, it's a very hype song, I guess. And I don't know, I've been listening to it a lot, at least for the gym, and I've just found it to be incredible. For the gym, it really just gets me amped up before I go. And even when I'm there, it just keeps me like on my toes. So I've been listening. I haven't really been consuming too much media the past week. I've been studying for midterms. So for the most part, it's been music. And in terms of that, like, this kind of hit really different.
Hopefully for next week's episode, or maybe the week after, we'll actually have a playlist with all of our stuff. That would be a dream, because I'm also recommending a song, and it's called The Hardest Part. It's actually a very sad song, so disclaimer there, but it is so well written, and it's produced by one of my favorite producers now, Dan Nigro, I think. He's so good. He produces like Olivia Rodrigo stuff, Conan Gray's, and now he like co-wrote and co-produced this song, and it's just great.
Damn. I mean, you know I like my sad music, so I'm definitely going to check that out. Hopefully in the playlist that we'll create.
Yeah, we should put that on there. Yeah, dude, it's funny because, so I listen to either like really, really hype music or very sad music. Like, there's no in between.
Really? I don't know. I find like a nice, I enjoy like the nice vibe sometimes, but I do kind of feel that. There are definitely like those times, those periods of time where I'm just like one or the other. It's polar opposites. It's just, I'm either incredibly just trying to get amped up, or I'm just like really, really just feeling the vibes.
What would you, like, what would be an in between?
I like Khaled a lot, actually.
Oh, me too, actually. Okay, so maybe I'm not. Maybe I do listen to some in between.
Yeah, like a lot of his stuff isn't super, super upbeat, but it's not also super, super depressing. Like, you can find definitely some that are, but for the most part, it's like, I find a nice in between.
Yeah, I agree. All right, what's your next one?
My next one's actually a TV show. I just started watching the second season of Dave. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. It's on, at least here in Canada, it's on Disney Plus. There's an artist, his name is Lil Dicky, and he does like satirical rap almost. And so his entire vibe has been about like how he wants to become a comedian, and how he also like, he's an aspiring comedian, but he's also an artist. And a lot of the music that he makes are like kind of satirical pieces. They're all kind of jokes. And so he made a TV show about like his experience, like growing up and him like trying to get into the music space. And it's like loosely based around his life. It talks a little bit about why he's called Lil Dicky. And I don't know, I just thought the show was hilarious. He did a really, really good job writing it and directing it. So I would recommend it. There's also a ton of cameos in it too. Like Kendall Jenner was in one of the episodes I just watched. Justin Bieber was in an episode. A ton of really, really cool celebrities are guest appearing in it, like all over the place. So highly recommend it.
That's a great one. I actually hadn't heard of it before. Interesting. All right. My second to last one is a video actually that Mr. Who's the Boss put out. And Josh, have you seen it? It's his latest one on his health.
I have not, actually.
Okay. So basically, it's a video about how high retention videos are like really affecting him in a negative way. And I resonated a lot with it as a creator, because it's kind of meta, because the video is edited to be really high retention. Like, he's talking about how it's so bad for him, and then the entire video is shot to be high retention, meaning like angle changes, animations, really fast pacing, tons of like work put into like 1 second of the video, etc. And I resonated a lot with it because I feel like I put a lot of pressure on myself to make every video the best one yet. And I think that in some ways that's like an unrealistic goal, because it's impossible to top yourself every single week if that's how consistent you want to be. And I just like really respected and appreciated that he came out and said it, but it also kind of made me like a little bit, I don't know, like scared as a creator. Like, do you need to put in that level of work where like you're literally destroying your health in order to be successful? I think it's something that is definitely worth thinking about, because as we become more and more focused on like watch time and retention and things like that, there is a pressure to always like outdo yourself, and you kind of every single minute know how well you're performing.
No, that's true. That's actually really fair too. Like, I feel like that kind of contributes to burnout in a sense, in the respect that as much as we as people, I guess, would like to constantly be growing and like moving forward in our lives and our careers, like it does come to a point where it's like, am I doing too much? Am I spreading myself so thin? Like, there's barely a layer of cream cheese on this like bagel, like that kind of idea, you know, like.
I've never heard that expression before, but that's great.
Well, I mean, it's more like an analogy for like, or like a euphemism for like, I guess, spreading yourself too thin, like just having that thin layer because you're almost out of cream cheese, like, or like something like that. Like, just like, eh, like it's not great. It'll keep you going, but it's not sustainable.
Agreed.
So like, I think that when he talks about like having to push yourself to that next level, and even for you too, right? Like moving, like pushing yourself consistently to be better is part of trying to advance yourself and getting ahead of everyone else, like getting ahead of yourself, I guess, a little bit, like just trying to make sure that you're constantly moving forward and moving up. But like, there's also that work-life balance that needs to be created, that ability to sit down and just relax, which I feel like a lot of us, especially through the pandemic, have like lost the ability to do. I don't really know how to relax anymore. Like, it's kind of just like, cause there's no, it's this constant gray area where it's either you're working or you're sleeping, but it's all in the same place.
Yeah. I think that that's one of the really hard things about like working from home and stuff. And I think also with the pandemic, I feel like we really lost like the sense of like, we have control over things. Like, I feel like up until that point, like, obviously there was bad stuff that had happened in my life, like everyone, but I felt like for the most part, I had control. And I feel like then COVID happened and like everything got canceled and like there was a huge health risk, all these things. And I don't know, I feel like it changed at least my perception on like control and stuff. And that has made it difficult as well. And then because of that, like you're searching for like control in different areas of your life, like controlling how much you work or retention or whatever it may be. So I don't know. I appreciated that he kind of like forefronted that problem and put a spotlight on it because he's obviously one of the biggest creators in tech. And he's also so good at his job. And I think that it's really aspirational, but it's also like, how do we all find that balance so we're not like ruining other parts of our life for just one thing?
Exactly. But on a lighter note, I'm going to just end off with my last suggestion for this week. And it's actually a TV show that my roommate showed me the other day. They're like short animated series of different genres, like science fiction, fantasy, horror, comedy, with these world-class animation creators. So pretty much it's on Netflix. It's called Love, Death, and Robots. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. They're like 10 to 15 minute episodes.
I haven't, no.
I kind of really like it. Like the animation's incredible for one, but then the story is also really, really well done. And for like 10 to 15 minutes to tell a full story from start to begin, like start to end, like you get this taste of this like longer, more in-depth, I guess, world that you want to explore, but you can't because it's done. There's like one episode, I think there's only one episode with a part two. Everything else is just like one shot.
And where is it posted?
Netflix.
Okay. Wow. So kind of full circle, bringing it back to our first topic.
That was the plan. Not really, but that was the plan.
I love it. All right, guys. Well, that's it for this week. Again, I just want to say sorry if like we're a little lower energy. I feel like we pulled through in the second half maybe, but I want to thank you guys all so much for listening. Thanks to Adil Constantine for our intro outro music. Again, if you could let us know on Twitter if you prefer like the one episode, let's dive into a topic versus like multiple topics, that would be helpful. And we'll be back next week at 7 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Eastern. And then the last thing I want to ask as a favor, if there's a guest that you want us to have on the show, publicly tweet them and us. It helps. Like then they know that the audience actually wants it and they're more likely to say yes. So that would also be really helpful.
Absolutely. So if you guys want to see anyone, make sure to tweet them and us at Digital Dive Pod. And while you're there, make sure to drop us a follow too. Thank you guys so much for listening this week. We'll catch you guys next Monday at 7 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Eastern. Bye.
Sick.